Daniel Mundy, MD. Effects of thought on the body.
Talk a little bit about the effect that the thinking has on the body. It's been said that that disease is often psychosomatic. Is that the case?
People often talk about things being psychosomatic, so to speak. And of course, when you appreciate that mind and body cannot be disconnected in any way, that mind is just the process of any living system, then we know that mental life is very much a part of physical life. The perfect example of that is pain. Pain has its origins in what we call nociception. There's receiving sights that these receiving sites in the nervous system, which go to certain areas of the brain, and then what happens? It's not really pain until there's a mental evaluation of that. So that pain requires an evaluation in mental life. When you're unconscious, you don't actually feel pain. You feel pain when you're conscious. It's part of mental life. But then again, what isn't? So the idea of things being psychosomatic, I suppose that idea has been around for a very long time. And even the founder of modern psychiatry, Sigmund Freud, back in his day was a very accomplished neurologist who translated texts in neurology amongst three or four different languages, began to really take note and think about some of the things he would observe in his neurology clinic. For example, people who had seemingly impossible neurological findings, like glove anesthesia that didn't follow a particular nerve distribution, which led him to think about this paradigm that perhaps mental life can affect what's going on in the body. And actually, there's been numerous studies and just a wealth of scientific validation that substantiates that what goes on in mental life certainly affects the body. How could it not? Again, seeing the mind-body as an integrated whole, there were studies shortly after Pavlov's studies of conditioning that we could condition an immune response. In fact, I can remember being a university student in the 80s where we conditioned an immune response in mice. Something that was a neutral stimulus, the odor of camphor, could actually change the level of natural killer cells, one of the white blood cell types that most mammals have that ward off infections and viruses and things like that. So the fact that something that we perceive, which mental life certainly could be extended even beyond that, but anything we perceive from the environment is part of mental life. And keeping in mind that perception, cognition is the process of any living system, that all of those things can affect our physiology. How could they not?
So what would like self-hatred do to the body?
So our perceptions about ourselves affect how we feel and what our health status is. There have been numerous studies to support, for example, that when one is in a state of distress, anxiety, depression, at a point of major life transition, that they're more prone to illness and that immune function is different and that white blood cells respond differently. So that what's going on in mental life affects what's going on in physiology, really, that mind and body are one and the same, flip sides of the same coin, really has been shown over and over and over again. Even something as simple as, there was a great experiment done Stanford University, I believe, where people were given the task of eating something decadent. I think it was a piece of chocolate cake or perhaps they chose what the decadent thing was. And the people who did it with a sense of guilt and shame actually experienced a transient decrease in immune function, whereas those who were able to just enjoy the experience and savor this wonderful whatever that they put in their mouths actually had a surge in immune status. I think they looked at IgA or IgG levels.
There you go.
Love your food.
Love your food. Okay, let's just go further then. What is, are there any, in the research that you've done, have you seen connections between cancer and certain emotional states?
One's emotional state actually affects how one copes with and works through almost any illness state. For example, we recently here at Thomas Jefferson received a grant to look at cancer patients. It's been actually long known in the cancer literature that if people receive adequate emotional support, group intervention, those kinds of things, that their health-related quality of life is enhanced. And in original studies done by Dr. Spiegel, there was actually an increase in longevity. The original breast cancer group that he looked at, there was a longer survival time. It's really debated in the literature if those kinds of interventions increase survival time. But what is not debated, what is very clear, is that certain types of interventions actually can enhance the quality of a person's life, regardless of their disease state. So somebody who's suffering in terms of their distress level and how well they're able to enjoy life, that suffering can be decreased by addressing what's going on in mental life.
Are you willing to suggest, though, that, because we're talking about interventions, though, but are you willing to suggest that the mind state may actually manifest the disease?
You know, it's hard to know to what degree any one part of the system contributes to a particular disease state. Remember, it's a network, and there's all different levels of the network, and not one level is more important than another. So, for example, when somebody becomes ill, when somebody gets an infection, or really an illness of any kind, I suppose, it has to do with what's going on in the overall system. How is the system compromised? A system can be compromised from primary immunocompromise, from secondary immunocompromise, such as one's emotional state, one's mental life state. So really, what's going on in the system at any one time, we don't know. But all of those things contribute to illness. So it's really difficult to say that any one thing or any one component of the system has everything to do with one's health. That's going back to looking at things in a very reductionistic kind of way. For example, one might be vulnerable to an infection because one is in such a distraught emotional state that their immune system is reacting to that and they're vulnerable. Another person might receive such a huge load of the virus that they're immune system just can't overcome it, and they go into an illness state. Another person might have a combination of both going on. So it's really hard to know. And how we are in any one given day changes. That's the thing. You know, we're never in equilibrium. We're always in a state of flux, and we're always in a state of change, which I guess brings us back to a scientific way of looking at us. That's what makes us different than a Newtonian system or a Cartesian system. Those systems are all about non-living systems close to equilibrium. We're never close to equilibrium. We're always fluctuating in one direction or another. The only time that a living system, that we as a living system, are in equilibrium is at the moment of death. And if you look at things that measure or approximate measuring equilibrium, such as heart rate variability, We want high variability. We want to be able to accommodate different situations. Low variability is problematic and suggests that there's actually something wrong. So we're far from equilibrium, and we're constantly in a state of change. I sometimes use the analogy or metaphor of a river, a living system like a river. If we were to walk out to the park right now, to one of the little rivers or streams running through and stand in that, and then come back in and the next day go back out to that stream or 2 weeks later or 2 months later, are we in the same river? Yes and no. The structure of that river we would still call River X. However, the pattern of that river, going back to substance and form or structure and pattern, other words for it, the pattern of that river is completely different. There might be different life floating around in there than was there before. There might be a growth of certain types of plant life that wasn't there a few weeks ago. There might be some stones that fell into the river from the river's bank, which weren't there before, which create a disruption in the flow. Just like there are things that can happen in a living system that create a disruption of the flow. So all of those things, I think, metaphorically describe what's going on in a living system as well.